This week, in his maiden budget speech, Pascal Donoghue announced that over 1.8 billion euro would be allocated for housing next year, which the government says will provide homes for 25,000 people who are currently on waiting lists. The majority of these homes, around about 20,000 or so, will be rented from private landlords, built by private developers, or bought on the private market. According to Minister Owen Murphy, this reliance on the private sector is the legacy of many years of outsourcing social housing. Well, the Irish state has a somewhat checkered history when it comes to housing. Joining me in studio to discuss the history of public housing in Ireland is Diarmaid Ferriter, Professor of Modern Irish History at University College Dublin. Let's go right back to 1923, to the Commonwealth government, our first independent government. How did they fare when it came to social housing?
Not particularly well, and some senior Commonwealth ministers made it clear that they didn't think it was the role of the state to be providing social housing. Richard Mulcahy, for example, was on record as saying as the building industry must build the houses, not the state. And that did reflect quite a dominant attitude within Commonwealth. Though there were others within that government who felt that the state needed to do more. And by the end of that decade, Commonwealth did actually introduce a Housing Act in 1929, which facilitated greater social housing and the provision of grants and the introduction of compulsory acquisition orders. But you've actually got to go back further. This is not just a story of the Irish state, Miles. It's a story of the British state also. Because if you go back to the pre-independence situation, you can see that the measures for social housing in Ireland were actually very far-reaching and very progressive. If you go right back to the land war, for example, where you have this huge transfer between landlord and tenant, ultimately resulting in tenants owning their own land, there had to be a corresponding gesture for those who weren't tenants, in other words, agricultural labourers. And the British government came under increasing pressure from the Irish Parliamentary Party to do something about that, and they did. They did it through the Labourers Acts in 1883, then in 1906, where they basically provided very generous exchequer funding for the local authorities to build houses, good houses, for agricultural labourers. And that was in parallel with the land war and the land legislation that was facilitating the transfer between landlord and tenant. And the legacy of that was profound, because by 1914 there were 48,000 of those houses that had been built, and Irish agricultural labourers were regarded as some of the best housed labourers, agricultural labourers in Europe at that time.
So there's a huge contrast between that and the first decade.
Oh, very much so. I mean, it's actually quite extraordinary when you look at the figures, and also not just in rural areas, in urban areas, because then, of course, politicians were saying, what about our urban working class areas? And then there was a 1908 Housing Act, which basically did the same for urban areas. So before independence, you have that. And it's also the case that by that stage in the early 20th century, social housing in Ireland was far more advanced than it was in the rest of the United Kingdom.
But they still didn't kill home rule by kindness. Now, one man who stood on a platform always of acceptable public housing from the very early days of the state, became a Labour TD in 1923. Timothy Murphy, tell us about him.
Yeah, Tim Murphy came to prominence. I mean, he came into politics on the back of the trade union movement. He's very active in Cork, very active in Cork County Council also. And he was somebody who, by the time he got into power with the Labour Party as part of that first coalition government from 1948 to 1951. He was appointed Minister for Local Government, but in effect he appointed himself Minister for Housing, even though there was no such thing, because that became the drive, the all-out drive, as it was referred to. There was a programme for house building called Ireland is Building, and the aim was to try and get this all-out drive, with the agreement of Fine Gael and Johnny Costello, as Taoiseach was supportive of Murphy. Murphy died very suddenly in 1949 when he was addressing a meeting in Cork about
his
housing.
His last words were about
rescuing people from hovels, as he put it. But Johnny Costello was on the platform with him and led the rosary after it had been announced that he had died. Very tragic. But then it was Michael Keyes who succeeded him. I mean, he saw through this drive. And it is an extraordinary drive. And again, it's coming on the back of concerns about a fall off in the number of social housing. There was a huge drive in the 1930s, particularly with the 1932 Housing Act. Clearing slums was a big priority for the Fianna Fáil government.
It was Fianna Fáil, yeah.
It was Fianna Fáil. Okay. But you also had, again, the use of compulsory acquisition orders. If you think of places like Crumlin and Cabra now, for example, and the housing developments there from the 1930s and the 1940s, you know, they belong to this particular era and these initiatives.
This is the stuff that Brendan Behan was writing about.
Absolutely,
moving to the countryside.
It was was the countryside as far as many inner city residents were concerned. And I mean, there was an inquiry into the housing of the working classes that was published in the early 1940s, and it had surveyed 34,000 families in Dublin, in the city centre at that time, and 70% of them were living in one-roomed dwellings. So that was regarded as a great shame, and not enough had been done in the 1920s. De Valera are very committed to that in both an urban and a rural sense. There's also a Land Act of 1933, which enables the Land Commission to, again, compulsorily acquire land and to redistribute that land. And the way this was framed was that it was essential in any Christian state that this housing is based on social justice. So what you also have in parallel with that is a Labourers Act in 1936, which requires local authorities to make social housing available to tenants for purchase at very, very generous rates. And again, in the long term, this results in a huge amount of people being able to own those houses, so that there is that transfer from tenancy to ownership. So again, you know, building on that, it does fall off somewhat, but it's built on again in the 1950s. So you can see the cycles.
Yeah.
But what's always there is, during, you know, these Ireland is building phases, what's always there is a cross-party consensus that this is for the common good. So we don't necessarily
have
these
public housing built by, obviously built by private builders, but built by private builders on behalf of the state.
There's also a direct labour, you know, that local authorities are directly building social housing and they're using direct labour. It's a mixture, you know, the overall housing situation. But to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, in the 1950s, that decade, social housing, 53,000 houses built, private housing, 49,000. It's roughly half and half. You have a very aggressive state intervention. Fine Gael are signed up to it. The Labour Party are signed up to it. Fianna Fáil are signed up to it. So there are no big ideological gulfs or battles going on. There is that general consensus. And I think that is one of the things that changes subsequently. There's also, of course, by the early 1960s, the scandal of the continuance of the tenements. I mean, Fenian Street, Bolton Street, 1963, people die as a result of collapsing tenements. But then they do an inventory of the housing stock around the country. And one of the big problems there is the age of the houses. And when they look, for example, in 1964, there was a white paper on housing. Even outside of Dublin and Cork, where there were serious problems, there were 70,000 unfit houses. And at that stage, there were 675,000 private dwellings in the state, but more than 300,000 of them were over 60 years of age, and 160,000 were over 100 years old. So there's a serious problem with the age of the housing stock at that stage.
You've written yourself about how class and ideology have always been central to housing policy. Explain what you mean by that.
What I mean by that is that, you know, if we refer to ideology in the context of state intervention or leaving housing to the private market, clearly it is, you know, a matter of ideology. But the ideology behind state intervention, you know, most are broadly signed up to that. When we go on to the 1970s, we can again see that there's a huge housing drive. There's been much comment on this recently because of the recent death of Liam Cosgrave and the record of that government. And again, the Labour Party is pushing this, but Fine Gael is also facilitating it. And what you have at that stage, again, is that combination of a belief in the importance of affordable social housing, but also a belief that this can stimulate the economy generally, because you're generating...
It's Keynesian.
It is. And it's something that, again, when you look at... By 1977, it's estimated that there had been about 100,000 houses built, and they're built quickly. And, you know, what are the advantages of this kind of social housing? Well, these houses are being rented for relatively modest amounts, tenants have security of tenure, and there's free maintenance. So there are a lot of advantages to this. But in parallel with this, you have the ongoing sale, the facilitation by the state of the sale of social housing. And by the 1990s, local authority dwellings sold to tenants accounted for one quarter of the dwellings in private ownership in Ireland. Now, this is facilitated from 1966 in both urban and rural areas by the 1966 Housing Act. So well before Margaret Thatcher's famous quest to have people owning their own houses, this is being done in Ireland. And again, when you look at that universal right, Irish tenants, Irish social tenants, enjoyed a universal right to purchase their own homes long before the United Kingdom.
1974, a crucial report. It's referred to over and over again when you hear debates about housing, and that was the Kenny report, a report by Judge John Kenny.
Yeah.
I think more honoured in the breach than in the observance, perhaps.
No, he wasn't honoured. I mean, what John Kenny was essentially saying was that local authorities should be able to compulsorily acquire land at 25% above its existing value. This was to face down the speculators. Speculation of land and land hoarding was becoming a serious problem. And here was a wise solution. You do have to compensate people for compulsory acquisition. 25% is a fairly decent cut. And then you get that land for the common good. Now, there were always claims that, oh, there were concerns about the constitutionality of this. That's absolute rubbish. You know, people talk about the Irish love affair with private property and the need to safeguard that. There is also constitutional provision for the common good. So this wasn't in any way unconstitutional. Governments, successive governments, were not prepared to face down vested interests, very powerful vested interests, of course, who lobbied very, very aggressively. And it was left to gather dust. And Judge John Kenny was always pretty fed up about that.
Mm. Looking back, you've got the perspective. Looking back on the history of this subject, are we now in the midst of the worst housing crisis the country has ever faced? We always feel that we're in the midst of the worst, whatever it is, at any particular point in time. Are we?
This is the worst it has ever been. And the reason I say that is, in one way, quite simple. If you have a look at how this question evolved, the portion of social housing as against private housing, it was about 50% in the 1950s. It was about 30% in the 1970s, 30% social housing, 70% private housing. It's now in the region of 5%. And to put flesh on those bones, if you have a look at the 1990s, for example, social housing, 20,000 units at houses, social housing in that decade, private housing, 275,000. And then have a look at the period 2000 to 2007, so right up to the boom, as the boom got boomiest, social houses, 47,000. Private houses, 468,000. So that's how the figures had got skewed. Now, if the answer that was often given was market forces will sort this out and leave them at it, well, there's your answer. If market forces were going to sort this out and private market forces were going to sort this out, surely it would have been sorted out at a time when there were more houses being built in this country than any time previously. Clearly, that didn't happen. Market forces cannot solve a housing crisis. And if there's anything to be learned from this brief housing history lesson, it's that unless you have very aggressive state intervention and a very firm state commitment to the provision of social housing, you're not going to solve a housing crisis. And it's fair to say that the housing crisis we have now is the worst.
Okay. Dermot Farrador, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the History Show this evening.